SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races. We're live at Treasure Island for NHC 19. Dick Powell joining us back in the Capital District. And I'm still speaking of the Capital District. We're still watching for a Seth Merrow appearance. Seth has been let loose on the horse-playing world, showing up in all kinds of places. Dick, good morning.
No, he's been let loose in the Las Vegas world. That's your problem.
Well, there may be. It may be. This is going to be interesting because Seth has been known to do some night crawling. I can't wait till he turns up here. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Well, on East Coast time, he's still probably in his night crawling mode. So,
could be. Well, it is 10 o'clock Eastern. I mean, let's be honest. By now, he should have gotten home from Caroline Street, I would think. this is a little different, though, I guess. We'll see. We'll see when Seth. I'm looking forward to seeing him here. He's excited. I know he was excited. I talked to him midweek, and we'll have him on. And, Dick, you've been out here for this a few times.
No, I have not. No?
The first year
there was a Horse Player World Series.
Okay.
And that was held at the Orleans, and I
yes.
didn't qualify for that.
Okay.
And I've never qualified for the NHC, and then I decided between that and the BCBC, I was blowing more money trying to qualify than I would have made just on regular betting. So I have not been playing qualifiers or anything, and I have not been out there. I did at Del Mar, whenever it was, the year before last.
Yes.
I did pop my head in to say hello to Chick Matisse. I saw Duke on the train the night before, and I said, well, I want to say hello to your dad. So I've known Chick for a long time, obviously Paul, and probably know a good amount of people in there. But, yeah, it's pretty tough doing it for that kind of money and that kind of pressure.
Well, and Chick, a late arrival last night, and looking forward myself to seeing him. Meanwhile, Dick, let's get our conversation in for the Hong Kong action. And, of course, Happy Valley the other day, and you know, we looked forward to last Saturday, Sunday. Give us some recap of what we discussed and how that turned out.
Well, that they had a special Sha-Tin card on Thursday because it was Chinese New Year, Year of the Pig.
That's right, which is a big deal.
I celebrated with a bag of M&Ms, just to be in the spirit. And they had over 100,000 people, and they bet $230 million. So I would call that business as usual for Hong Kong racing. 11 races, kind of formful. And one thing I picked up looking at the winning times is how tight they are. They don't vary much. And most races at Hong Kong are run with a pretty strong pace. And part of that is just due to the full field. I get these emails at night from the media relations department about the race that they're holding open because they only have 12 starters. And they won't close the race because they want to get two more to have full 14. So when you have that many horses in a race, no one really gets an easy lead. If you make a clear lead, you've had to use energy to do so. And usually someone's making a challenge because they're caught four wide and they have to move up. So there's strong paces, strong final finishing times. Turf has been good to firm lately, so it's been yielding those kind of times. What was interesting with Thursday's card, Steve, was most of these races, if not all of them, are handicap races. And handicap races, the one horse is the highest weight and also the highest rated. And the 12, 13, 14 are the lowest rated and, you know, usually the lowest rated. So it's a balance of deciding how much weight is going to have an effect. And the races usually have a 20-point spread. So it's 40 to 60, 60 to 80. 80 to 100. And that could be as many as 20 pounds between the one horse and the 14 horse. So is the 14 horse, even though he's not as good as the one horse, getting that much weight? Is he going to be competitive? Well, anyway, on Thursday, because the races were formful, we saw a lot of the high-weight horses do well. And you can see that with just the finishing results, the two horse, the three horse. It was an 11, then another 2, then a 3, then a 7, then a 3. So that shows you that the higher-weighted horses were holding off the lighter-weighted horses. And there's no reason for them not to, except, you know, that they have to get the trip carrying that kind of weight. Well, one interesting race that I found was race 10, which was a 60 to 80 handicap, what they call a class 3. And it was won by the 14 horse, Pickens. And this horse got bet real good. In fact, it was 9 to 10, the way we compute odds, $1.90, the way they compute odds. And had Jal Marrera, John Size, that's the leading jockey-trainer combination, and Marrera had 3 winners out of the 11 races on Thursday. But Pickin had been moving up in class and had been running against 40 to 60. And when you use the Hong Kong Jockey Club past performances, which right now they are available to Sunday's next Shot 10 card, once you get acclimated to them, you can find the ratings of their previous races. So Pickin had gone from 49 to 54 to 60. So his last race, he missed by a nose. He won his 2 previous races. So he kind of moved out of the 40 to 60, and now he's in a 60 to 80. Now, that's a pretty decent-sized jump in class, except he got in with a 62 rating, which meant he only had to carry 115 pounds. So you have a horse in really good form, in light with 115, but is facing horses that are rated, you know, 80, 78, and then farther down the line. So he's getting a tremendous amount of weight. He drew well. Even though his saddle cloth number is 14, he drew from post 3, and he just romped as easy as he could and didn't pay much. But it was a good example of making sure you know the horse ratings. Like when you handicap Dubai Racing, you go to emmetsracing.com and look up the entries there. You see the ratings of all the horses. I use Racing Post in England to on a lot of international races, and they give you the ratings. And they're just important to know as a background for what you're doing. So Thursday, very formful at Shot 10. Good weather, strong paces, fast times, 109 and change, 121 and change for 7 furlongs. Now they go back to their normal Shot 10 card this coming Sunday, which will be midnight East Coast time, Saturday night. And where did I put it? And now, and also, this is the beginning of the second half. So this is race day 45 out of an 88-day meet. Race 3 is the Daffodil Handicap. And this is a class 2, and these are for horses 80 to 100. Now, I looked up the odds that are currently in Australia, and it's an interesting group because even though it's 80 to 100, the high-rated horse is only 87. Number 1, Tigre del Tour. So 87 down to 81, that's only 6 points. So this is a pretty tightly grouped bunch, and the weights reflect that because the high weight is 124 and the low weight is 118. We don't usually see that in these kind of handicap races. But the 3 high weights are 16-1, 16-1, 40-1 currently in the early Australian betting. So they're saying we like the lower weighted horses, and there's a couple of good speed horses in this field. And when you look at the form card on the website, the last page is called Speed Map, and it gives you a visual depiction of where the horses will be early in the race, and then it gives you nice commentary about how they expect the race to be run. So race 3, they expect Charity Go, who's number 2, with Karis Teton, to go to the front. Now, he has shown speed in the past. He has the ability to go to the front. He hasn't been doing it lately, but now he stretches out to a mile and a quarter. So So he might be prominently placed, especially Drew to rail. So he really doesn't have any choice to, you know, he has to avoid getting shuffled back. The horse who'll probably press him is number 7, Giant Turtle, who is intriguing. He's 13-2 in Australia right now. He's been running well. Nothing not to knock about him, including he's won going this distance before. And considering most of your Hong Kong races are one-turn sprints, this is nice to see a horse who can get a distance of ground. He's a New Zealand bred by Zabil, and anyone who knows international pedigrees knows the influence of Zabil down under. So I think Giant Turtle has a shot. And then there's a horse named Enrichment that we talked about last time who ran second as the favorite, got that really good that day, coming back, draws post 3, gets Marrera. Just nothing not to like about this horse other than we'll probably get overbet. So the big thing with Hong Kong are the Quinellas, and there's no win value here with number 6 in Richmond, but certainly with Quinellas, I would play 6 with the 2, who's 16-1, at least in Australia now, will probably be a good 10-1 price in here. And with the 7, Giant Turtle, who either will be in front or will be pressing the 2 out of the gate. So those two look like they have a chance at the 6, but the 6 just looks too tough, especially when you look at the prices he's been going off. He's been getting bet, and rightfully so, and the public was really on him last time. Good Standing ran a stakes quality race in a class 2 race. So you'll see him in the stakes company coming up real soon. So Hong Kong race 3 coming up Sunday, Saturday night, for you in the East Coast. We'll play Quinella 6 with 2-7. Try to get a little bit of value with one of the price horses in there.
Dick, in terms of the offering, and you know, we touched on it last week, the platforms that are taking the bet, and I know that that's being worked on, but for those that haven't noticed it on their menus, accessible where?
TwinSpire, TVG, ExpressBet. I know they have it. Right now, I think Naira Betts has a tote issue, and they're working on that. I'm pretty sure AmWest has it. I'd have to check. But I know the major ADWs all have it. There is a little lack of consistency, let me put it that way, in terms of bet minimums and things like that, that Michelle Fisher is working on to try to standardize the bet minimums and things like that. It's been a little confusing, and that's why she's been brought on to kind of rectify this, because it's hard for people 13 hours away time zone to try to monitor what our ADWs are doing. Usually you can just do it in a no-holds-barred contract, do it this way or else. But I guess that there's been some interpretation on the contract. So we'll get that standardized better. But you can always bet win. You can always bet show. And show goes down 3 places. So it's like a place. It's the same as our show betting, but there's no place betting. And then you can always bet Quinella. And some of them, some of the sites, I think, in fact, all of them have what's called an omni-swinger, where yep. you can bet 3 horses in a Quinella. And let's say you bet 1-2-3 in a Quinella. If it comes in 1-2, 2-3, or 1-3, you win. Well, some might pay better than others, depending on the odds. And that's a popular bet overseas. Omni-swinger is a very, very popular. Lots of handle goes through them.
It's funny. It came up just last night. We were when we were at dinner group, including Frank McGooey and John Nichols, and we were talking specifically about the varied offerings. And there's quite a discussion going on. In fact, Paul Matisse, when he joins us this weekend, Paul's working on a couple of things, consulting to to a couple different racetrack organizations, and I talked up the Omni, and that there's been a couple of nibbles and some flirting with it in North America. Naira was ready, it seemed, to move forward with it, and it does seem like a great entry-level wager for people that when they start betting and they play exactas and they don't understand when they run 1-3, why didn't I cash? And I've relayed that story from Tina and her days at working as a mutual clerk, and the Omni would kind of alleviate that. It's something that would be a great introduction to people for multi horse wagers, and then as they get more experienced, they understand better. But if you got paid for second and third, first and third, the way the Omni does, it might be a very nice way to introduce people to multi horse bets.
Yes, and it's also a churn bet. And Bill Nader gave a speech at one of the conferences I was at, and he had percentages about how much of their betting is Wynn and Show and Quinellas. And it's a big percentage. And we've developed this culture of bet a little, win a lot. Now, here's a perfect example. Last week's Super Bowl. The regions that took mostly sides, either Patriots or the Rams, got beat. The players won. They were on the right side. Las Vegas made 10 times more money in this year's Super Bowl than last year's Super Bowl, where they barely broke even. Why? Because everyone has gone prop crazy, parlay crazy, bet a little, win
a
lot.
That's a great point. That's a great analogy,
Dick. And when I track this, Steve, when I can get monthly reports out of these gaming commissions, it's unbelievable the difference between the hold on regular betting, which is 5-6%, and then parlay betting, which is close to 10%. So when I was a kid growing up in New York City in Staten Island, when they started having parlays, I was told by the people who were running the business, we only have them because they work. If they didn't work, we wouldn't have them. If the bettors were winning and making money on parlays, they wouldn't be offering parlays. So, yeah, you hear about a guy who went in and bet $250 at 4-something to 1, got some outrageous 40-to-1 odds and picked up $100,000 when the Rams only scored 3 points. That's a great story. But there's a ton of more money going down the tube when a game like the Super Bowl only has 16 total points and most of the propositions lost, because propositions usually somebody doing something, yep, not necessarily people betting that they won't do it. But the point is that if sports betting starts, which they are, because it's very attractive, it gets a lot of attention, playing these props, and especially playing five-team parlays, things like that, then they're back to horse racing's problem with lack of churn, only a few people winning, not enough money coming back. So the Omni Swinger, I think, does that. And I'd like to see somebody try it and give it a shot, because it needs to be explained. But then once people see, I got split in the middle, or whatever it was, and they still got a chance of winning. And it doesn't cost much to play. You're not playing 12 combinations, 6 combinations.
No, it's a terrific, Dick, that was a tremendous analogy. The props to our exotics and versus, focusing in. And this is exactly what came up last night in the conversation about focusing in on win bets. And, Frank McGooey, who's a big player, and John Nichols, Megan Devine with us as well. And we ended up talking about, the presentation, and Nick Tamaro sitting with us already. And we'll get to Nick here simultaneously doing our Game Builder segment. I'll carry this conversation forward with Nick. But that topic is being driven home more and more about focusing in on wins and straight exactas. We had this discussion, Nick, on Monday, coming out of the weekend and out of the Pegasus betting challenge as well. And this is probably an important point to drive home. Dick, I appreciate it, and we'll look forward to next week and keeping everybody going to get them to track what's going on in Hong Kong. You can follow HKJC underscore racing, the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and, of course, HKJC.com. So much information available to you, and we'll keep trying to point out the all the information, the data that you can use off the website to understand what's going on at Sha Tin and Happy Valley. Dick, enjoy the weekend.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Talk to you next week.
You got it, Dick Powell. And we'll stay right here because Nick is sitting in front of me.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Let me try to adjust you volume-wise. And you ready for another run at this?
I'm ready as I'm going to be.
Yeah.
I think you hit a wall in terms of preparation, and it happened yesterday afternoon. So still plenty of work to do, but ready to get it going.
And, you know, yesterday it was kind of interesting to watch who went ahead and participated, whether they needed a seat or not, a second seat or a first seat in some cases, and some that were double qualified that were playing for next year, and then you know some that just seemed to want the action, and you know they were giving away $25,000 yesterday to the winner, and it was a spirited atmosphere. They had 300 plus entries.
Yeah, it's something I've never done. I don't envision myself ever doing it, just because I don't.
It's too much, huh? It's just
I don't want to add another Dave at risk of getting another lecture on Twitter from Dave Gutfriend about it. I don't want to add another day of handicapping, and the one advantage I think is that those cards do come out early, so you can get to working maybe a little bit sooner. But with what faces us on Friday and Saturday, I just don't have the heart for it. And you look at who was in there and who did well, and John Nichols, obviously, who got his second entry and had a pretty big day on his own.
Unbelievable.
Nothing new for him, though. So, yeah, hats off to them. And I'm sure you get 300 people play in a contest, it's pretty fun no matter what.
No doubt. And they came out, the guys were, despite everything that we've got ahead of us today, tomorrow, and Sunday, when they shut down the screens about mid-card, a little past mid-card at Santa Anita, it was, I think, after the sixth was the last race of the contest, and then, you know, Golden Gate, whatever, everything else came down. Oaklawn was still running, and everybody was like, well, wait a minute, what are you doing? What are you doing? But they didn't have it on the screen, but you could still bet. But it seemed like, you know, people were complaining. They're like, we're here, we want to bet. It's like, take our money.
That's right. Hey. That's a good thing.
Well, there won't be any shortage here, obviously, today. We start at noon, so we're about 90 minutes away. And, you know, one thing that is going to be a little different is this downstairs ballroom, splitting up things. And I think it's spread out. They've also allowed everybody to have at least one guest. And it's kind of an interesting development that we actually haven't explored, Nick, because there's quite a few people that are going to have friends or people that they play with at racetracks at times. Roger Satina, his man Frank Sorensen. Frank didn't qualify this year, but Frank will be sitting, you know, with him and right in front of us, actually. And Roger said he would feel out of sorts if Frank wasn't there to bounce things off and to discuss. And that's, you know, that's not a team approach per se, although there might be some, you know, partners that are going to split tickets and so forth that would split winnings that way, because that's their approach.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I mean, I've always brought a guest to this. So Philly Joe has been my guest multiple years. He did qualify one year, didn't qualify this year, but he's here, and Pat Cummings is here as well, who is not participating, but, you know, we play the races together quite a bit, and I think there's a certain bit of camaraderie to this thing, too, that you don't want to lose out on, and I think that people do have a comfort zone with certain people that are around them. I'm interested to see how the multi-floor setup goes. I am not a main ballroom guy, so I will be downstairs. If I could do this from the Mirage Sportsbook, I probably would. And it's just a psychological thing. When you're sitting in this main ballroom and a 15-to-1 shot wins and there are 20 guys standing up screaming and yelling, what is already an incredibly daunting task becomes that much harder. Because now you're thinking, great, those guys have a $45 lead on me. What am I going to do? Now I have to start stabbing. And now you just you basically take the whole game plan, throw it out the window. And I don't need anything to assist me in doing that. I want to do that on my own volition. So I don't prefer it. We used to sit in the Caribbean room, yes. which is now where breakfast and lunch are, and but they've relocated us downstairs. They let us keep our table number, so all is right in the world. This was Jonathan Kinchin's big concern all week, was whether we were going to have the seating arrangement sorted out, because he wasn't coming in until last night. But we had the intervention of a couple of NHC angels, you could say, to help us get it done.
Very nice. Well, we're getting ready, and we'll start our coverage 2 o'clock Eastern, and you just use the website stream and go to stevebick.com. If you are somebody that listens on Sirius XM, just go to the website and the Listen Live link that will give you everything. And if those of you that are wondering about an address, it is stevebick.com/listen-live-SiriusXM. stevebick.com/listen-live-SiriusXM. /2, but I don't think you need the /. Let's slash our way through some action and another week with Game Builder. Although, Nick, they didn't do anybody any favors, I don't think, at Tampa. I don't understand not using the 4 stakes as an all-stake pick 4. Instead, they're slapping on that nightcap, although apparently Rich Averill may be tough to beat in there. And if we see Rich, we'll maybe get a maybe we'll get a push from him. An official confirmation.
Yeah, I actually downloaded my PP so early. It said 8, 9, 10th, 11th for the pick 4. So that was I've looked at the 10th, or the 12th, sorry, but not quite as interested in that as I would have been a stake race. Nonetheless, it's a good sequence. I think the most unfortunate thing about it being on races 9 through 12 is that you won't get the Tampa Bay in it. And the Tampa Bay is a really, really terrific race, which we can touch on just because we've looked at it, and it's going to be a race that people want to bet, mainly because Heart to Heart is sort of at a crossroads in his career, in that he had a very difficult trip last time. When you note a chart caller putting a comment like tough trip in a running line, it usually is indicative of what kind of issues they ran into. Like a few other Brian Lynch horses, he seemed to have a difficult time getting out of the gate. And when that happened, of course, the field sprinted away from him. This is a horse who's kind of a one-way speed ball. However, he showed a new dimension in rating a little bit off the pace and looked off the turn like he was going to get the job done. That was a field that he was much better than. This is a better quality field from top to bottom. I think even Shug McGahey would tell you that Inspector Lindley is a better horse than Dr. Mounty. But this is a situation where Heart to Heart is supposed to be loose on the lead. The competitors that have any speed, Cheyenne's Colonel and Irish Straight, to an extent, are not nearly fast enough to keep him honest early. If he's able to clear the field, he'll be very, very tough. I just have to use Inspector Lindley, who, of course, is an old friend of ours, based on that trip he had last time, the success he's had at Tampa in the past, and the fact that he really figures to get a perfect inside, kind of mid-pack to closing type of trip. And Tampa is a turf course that you absolutely have to save ground on both turns. If you lose ground making a move on either turn, you are really up against it from that point. So I'm expecting Inspector Lindley to run much, much better, and I think that might be enough for him to take down Heart to Heart. The Suncoast is a terrific race, and certainly a difficult start to the pick 4. You've got a few maiden winners coming off of those maiden wins, and there's really a decision you have to make about what you're going to do with them. I think the one who catches the eye perhaps the most is Point of Honor. This is a horse that's just bred to run all day and overcame a relatively sluggish pace in her debut to win going away. Now goes long, again, has the advantage of having won at a mile and a 16th, and again, feels like a horse who will not struggle at all with two turns and beyond. This looks like a race with a good bit of pace, based on what we've seen so far from these horses, albeit relatively early in their careers, but winning Envelope, Tappet's Princess, you have Lady Kate and Sacred Heart on the stretch out. Here Comes Jackie was relatively close to a hot pace last time. Twixt and Shout Stalk just off the pace, and Sweet Diane has tactical speed. That being said, it feels like a race where they'll move a little bit early, and Point of Honor might be the right one price-wise. Sweet Diane is the horse to beat, I'd say. Off a narrow miss in the hut, now goes two turns, was a big two-turn winner to break her maiden back in late September, so she feels like a horse who the trip will really suit quite nicely again. And Her Royal Highness down on the inside is going to have to improve, but is a horse that really has gotten her act together after a promising debut and now followed up that maiden win with another good win. So I'm gonna make sure to include all of those and just basically try and get through this in what really is a competitive race.
Let's pause for a second. I want you to help people that struggle with an increasingly prevalent and very modern issue. You look at this race, you got nine horses. Three of them. Here Comes Jackie, Point of Honor, Twixt and Shout are all coming off maiden-breaking wins that came off the turf. And in the case particularly of Here Comes Jackie and
two of them are on wet tracks too. Right?
Exactly. And you know, Twist and Shout, you've also have to digest the fact that she had been in two sprints before the stretch out try. So you have to discern, are they just taking a chance because they've got an opportunity and here's you know, Oaks points and let's see if she is a dirt horse? How do you handle this generally, Nick? Obviously we can use this as the focal point, but in general we see it more and more and more.
Yeah, and I think the advantage you'd give Point of Honor here is that her win did come on a fast track, so you wouldn't be as critical with it having been an off-the-turf situation. The other thing that you fold in with Twixt and Shout, Here Comes Jackie, both, is that they either had synthetic or turf back form, and obviously the prevailing thought on that is turfy types will take to a wet track a little bit better than they will a dry one. And really the last thing you would do is go through those fields. You know, utilize DRF Formulator, utilize Timeform US, which both have the functionality for you to go and look at who was in that race line by line, and that's going to indicate to you a little bit about what kind of race it was. That being said, none of these three ran against particularly strong fields. Now, we could also be finding ourselves in 2 or 3 months saying, wow, that Suncoast sure was weak. So you're talking about a bunch of horses that are buying in the low to mid-70s. So these aren't exactly stars. These are horses whose futures are all ahead of them in terms of development. So I think you want to take what value you can get. You also want to be critical of the ones that are going to be a little bit overbet. For me, Twixt and Shout feels like the one that's going to be most overbet based on the fact that her speed figure was a little bit higher. And there's this barn does well locally, so that's just the way I would approach it.
And generally, when instructing, you know, people that struggle with this issue, I mean, that's kind of a universal approach when you see this.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, you don't want to take hard and fast rules into everything. I think one of the biggest mistakes handicappers make is marry themselves to ideas too much without looking at races themselves. And you're trying to figure out how races are won, how races are run, that being the most important thing. So you don't want to marry yourself to a certain idea. You want to be as open-minded as possible. But you do want to have some basic points that you go through when looking at individual races.
Let's press on into the Endeavor and Marty McGee with the report that Rimska will run at Gulfstream in the Suwannee River, which opens this up, although Marty married himself pretty much to Hawksmoor, and I get that, but I thought that there were a couple of other candidates that were worth a hard, long look. There's a couple of horses that have certainly run races that would translate well here, including Bonnie Arch, that is going to be a little bit of a price.
Yeah, it's... I think it would be safe to say that Hawksmoor is now the horse to beat, but whether you want to concede the whole race to her is a different issue. She ran very well in the Athenia in her final start of 2018 and kind of showed that day a little bit of what we had seen from Rimska in the past, or from Hawksmoor in the past. Sorry, she lost to Rimska, showing that speed and giving it up a little bit late, but again, that was on a turf course that had taken some moisture, and that might not have been her ideal scenario. This is a horse who, bottom line, was very disappointing in 2018. She came out of 2017 looking like one that we'd really see compete in the best races for this division, and she just ultimately proved to not quite be that caliber. This is a great starting point and feels like a time where she should get the lead, and if she gets the lead, she can be very, very difficult. I think the best alternative is Get Explicit, who very quietly put together a couple of really nice races at Keeneland and Churchill in the fall, rallying to get second in the Valley View, and she was sort of a crazy price at 70-1. And then came back and ran a good second in the Mrs. Revere. Now, that being said, those were against three-year-old fillies, obviously. She's facing much more difficult competition in here, including the favorite, likely favorite, Hawksmoor. So I can understand where Marty's coming from in wanting to really focus any action, any multi-race action on Hawksmoor, but you definitely have some alternatives, I think, that you could use as substitutes.
Let's ABC this event.
Yeah, I would loan A Hawksmoor here. She's supposed to win with Rimska coming out, and I think I would use a couple of Cs, including Goodyear for Roses. I know she's off a very, very long leg. playoff, but you know, this is a Philly who clearly has races that are good enough to contend, and Brian House is by no means a household name, pun intended, but is a guy who's done a lot of good work in Louisiana over the years, and it's not going to be surprising to me for him to at least have this Philly ready, this mare ready, to get a piece of it. She may not quite be ready to win, but she's the type that I think you would want to use as a C, and I would use Get Explicit, who I brought up just a moment ago, and I don't know what's gone on with Monte Cristo in her last two starts. Obviously, the pebbles could be attributed to a very, very wet turf course, but
yeah.
She sure was in a good spot in the Marshawes River, came into that race working very, very well, and ended up doing nothing, stopping. Now comes back with some workouts again. The blinkers go on. That race she ran in the risk averse is good enough to contend in here. It's not good enough if Hawksmoor shows up with her best effort, but it's good enough for her to be a C.
Interesting. You know, the other horse that I brought up with Marty is Mirabelle's Viva Vegas, the 5-year-old mare, making a second start for Correas, and it feels like Nacho probably got what he wanted out of that prep in early January.
It does, and she outran, did not run to expectations, I would say, being a 9-10 favorite, but can move forward now second off the layoff. I'm a big Nacho Correas fan.
Yeah, very
so
much.
Very, very underrated, and while he might be having a little bit of a difficult meet, you know, this is a guy that wins at a 13-15% clip, but always has his horses in at the best meets in competitive spots, and really has done a good job while mainly flying under the radar. So I could easily see you including her. You take a race like last year's Violet, you know, she runs back to that, then she's squarely in the mix.
And that's what made this race intriguing with Rimska coming out, was
right.
That there were like three or four different
it
horses.
It was like if they run back to this.
Yes.
Then, right, exactly. And so, and of course, at the same time, we're also talking about Hawksmoor, who has to run back to some of her better races, too. If she runs back to her best races, she's going to win for fun.
Right.
But there's obviously some risk associated with assuming that. And you don't want to expect a little bit too much from her. What we do know is that the Rimska that we've seen, the Hawks, I keep calling her Rimska, the Hawksmoor that we've seen on numerous occasions is going to be good enough to win here. This is like brain fry. This is why I keep calling her the wrong name. You know, I never do stuff like that. But
the Sam Davis and K-Nick's Go has to right the ship.
How about you with the pronunciation? I was schooled by Pat Cummings on how you pronounce this horse's name. It is K-Nick's Go.
Yes. Yes.
KRA Stud Farm.
Exactly. And
much to the chagrin of Knicks fans out there and their 10-44 record.
Well, yes, and maybe it might be that the KRA didn't want to be associated with the Knickerbockers.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, this is an important start for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it really is. And again, a situation where the best of what we've seen from this horse is going to demolish this field. But it looks like he's in a very, very poor setting pace wise. He's going to have to face pace pressure from both sides. And it's very clear. I mean, the Breeders' Cup Juvenile was his best race, and he did not have the lead early in there. But duplicating that here when he's coming off a layoff, when he figures to face heat early, it just feels like a bad gamble. And he feels like the kind of horse that while you're going to use him, you're going to want to use as many alternatives as possible. And there are real alternatives in here. So I think that Of the others, the one that I want to use the most is Kentucky Wildcat, who I thought ran into a relatively tough field at Belmont back in October, came back and was very game in getting the job done in his next start. That was a super live race. Country House obviously came out and ran very well down at Gulfstream. So this is a horse who, with that tremendous pedigree, Tap It Out of Better Lucky, is one that should go on a little bit distance-wise. While Better Lucky did top out at about a mile to a mile and a 16th, she was a versatile filly who could really do anything. And Kentucky Wildcat just feels like he's going to get the run of the race. It feels like this race is going to be won by somebody who's sitting maybe fifth or sixth early and can make one run. So I'm gonna bank on Kentucky Wildcat being that candidate. The horse that's sort of I guess one that you have to deal with is So Alive, who broke his maiden impressively. Now, So Alive, I heard people say that his maiden win was Shades of Dialed In, who had all kinds of trouble in his maiden win back in 2010 at Churchill. So Alive didn't have any trouble. He just didn't get running until very, very late and got up late by a neck after kind of weaving his way between horses. He was very disappointing in his second start. He did come back and get the job done last time, but let's not kid ourselves. He got a 75 buyer. This is a horse who's going to have to improve by leaps and bounds, and you're going to have to take a really short price relative to his chances of winning. I would use him more as a backup than anything else and let him prove to me that he's really worthy of being a top-shelf type participant. And I think that that's the kind of critical approach that you want to take to him. I'm also going to use counteroffer because I feel like if you're going to take So Alive, you want to take counteroffer as well. And that's probably at least sound enough rationale, given the counteroffer did kind of make that first move into a pace that came apart. He's also a horse who's going to lay back and make one run. He has a little bit of a Harvey Wallbanger type feel to him, being one that's going to sit back there and hope there's pace.
Well, and we came up with Marty earlier talking about the Philly race and Antonio Gallardo and Ian Wilkes. They're only 5 for 11 at the meet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Ian's a guy who sent very live horses to Tampa left and right, and, you know, people scoff at the short, small purses and things like that, but I think most owners in this game are impervious to purses. They don't run for big purses.
I will mention that Going for Gold, who had the poor draw last week for the Holy Bull, opts for this spot and is going to be glossed over because he's a maiden, and
I know one guy who's going to bet on him.
Well, I would say that that Ron Paolucci not only will bet on him. Ron has got real expectation. He thinks this horse has got real quality about him and should not just be dismissed. And certainly the races that he ran at Laurel in December laid the groundwork for forward progress as a three-year-old.
Sure.
I mean, his those two races, even though he got beat a neck and a nose, those hold up with anything most of these did it to.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Drawn inside, you know, the strategy is going to be very, very clear. Ron is a guy who never lacks for confidence, and I always root for Ron when I can't win. Fortunately, in these spots, he doesn't win that much, so it doesn't knock me out too much. And he would appreciate me saying that, I'm sure. But, no, I know he liked this horse. He actually mentioned it to me in December when he was working on buying him early January. And I thought he would certainly have an impact in the race last week that he was entered in. He'll definitely have an impact in here. How long he'll be in there for, who knows. But he's one with the blinkers going on, obviously, that is just going to run and gun.
The Godolphin involvement here, the Owen Hardy and Albert Tranny, and I kind of cast a little bit of a glow on Kentucky Wildcat, who's getting plenty of buzz, and being a tappet out of the wonderful Better Lucky, has every right to, you know, keep enjoying these trips. And the 2 one-turn performances and the steady progress, and knowing how Albert Tranny treats his young horses, there's obviously upside yet for Kentucky Wildcat. And you also get Joe Bravo, who, if this has a pace collapse potential,
well,
to it, Joe's the guy you want to make that late swooping move wide and gobble him up late.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think he makes a lot of sense. He's obviously the more fancied Godolphin of him and Cave Run.
Although there's nothing wrong with Cave Run.
Cave Run was disappointing in the past. What I'm wondering
he was, Cave Run is, the race was over for Cave Run under the conditions. He just was up against it. And to some degree, I would think that Castanon, you know, just saw that there wasn't any reason to beat him up at that point. And doesn't he also want to stretch out?
Well, I guess the gust of wind that was delivered when blew by him was enough for him to wrap it up. Yeah, he definitely wants to go longer. I'm wondering if turf might be his future, given the way he handled Slop in his debut. There's a little bit of turf on the dam side, so we'll see. He's interesting enough. He's probably somebody you'd relegate to a backup type opinion.
Let's do that ABC wise, because this now you made this why they don't have these lights turned up. From word go, I don't understand, but they finally turned the lights back up all the way. What are we doing in here prioritizing this group?
I mean, I'm gonna use counteroffer, Canix Go, Kentucky Wildcat is A's.
1-3-6.
So Alive is a B.
So Alive being an 8. 1-3-6 with 8 as a B.
Yeah, and then I'll C's will more than likely be 4 and 9.
Cave Run and Well Defined.
We'll have to go. I'm sorry. I wanted to use the Still Dreaming as well. who I think is a horse that's going to get better with more distance and experience. So that's a C. We'll have to put all this together in the morning with the 12th race being in and the 75 races I'm going to look at today.
Well, do you want to do it as a pick four, or you might as well do it as a pick five?
Yeah, we could do it as a pick five, right, because I'm just going to use Inspector Lindley and Heart to Heart in the Tampa Bay as A's.
To start things off.
Right, and then I'll use Curbon as a backup. So, yeah, we'll put that all together and go through this crazy 12th where I would say Adios Nardo is very, very much the horse to beat. So for Rich Averill, as you referred to earlier, he actually ran very well last time. One of those situations that we were talking about before where the horse saved a ton of ground, and that's a huge advantage at Tampa. If you're listening out there and you play Tampa on a regular basis, you know already, but very, very important to save ground in there. But between he and Rock Solid Golfer, I think you probably have the winner there.
So we'll be able to put a nice pick five ticket together for the first time, and we continue to do Game Builder, brought to you by the National HBPA, and we'll be convening. In fact, registration open for the National HBPA convention in March at Clearwater. We'll be back at Clearwater Beach there on the Key, and
you gonna hit Philly spring training.
You know
it's
what?
In Clearwater.
We could. That's a
lot of spring training around there.
A ton around there. And we used to go to Reddington Shores. And from Reddington Shores, you could reach everything, obviously, in Tampa and Clearwater. Or you could go over the beautiful bridge, the one that wasn't knocked down by a tanker, and go to Bradenton.
Sure.
To the Pirates.
Oh, the Skyway.
Which was
You're
the greatest.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And now the Orioles are down there, too, in Sarasota.
Nice. Haven't been.
New ballpark. Ed Smith Stadium. Nice place. And there's one other team down there. I can't remember. Everybody, obviously.
No, the Royals.
The Red Sox and Cardinals are all the way down in Fort Myers.
Yeah,
but,
I'm
sorry, Red Sox are down there. Cardinals are in Jupiter. Astros are in West Palm, so you can.
Astros used to be. I thought Astros
used to be Kissimmee.
For years and years.
Yeah,
I used to. Baseball America. I used to get that calendar, the minor league calendar from Baseball America. And Osceola County Stadium was a cute little place. We used to do my baseball league, the Eddie Goodell, even before we did rotisserie. We used to do spring training trips and have so much fun.
I think those would be a blast. You know you're going to get good weather for the most part.
Right.
And yeah, I've had seen quite a bit. When they built the ballpark at the beaches for the Astros and the Nationals, which I'm sure everybody out there is listening to hear this, but they did it very, very quickly. And the company I work for provided a lot of labor. So I got to go and see it get built as time went by.
Oh, cool.
And haven't been to a game yet, but looking to get out there.
Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam 1215. And we'll certainly look forward later today or tomorrow or maybe Sunday before the final table when he goes up on stage and is in the midst of a potential $800,000 cashing.
Let's
in
hope
the
this
NHC.
Isn't as close as I get to the stage.
Yeah, exactly. You can march right up. Nick, I appreciate it. Good luck, of course, in the contest.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Let's take a quick break right here. Even though Ed DeRosa is standing by, I got three cups of coffee. Back after this, NHC, we're at Treasure Island.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of HIAS.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BridgeNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BridgeNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BridgeNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BridgeNet.com/APR. The BridgeNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BridgeNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BridgeNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.